summoning hour.
Welcome everyone to episode 74 of the summoning hour with me, your host, Warlock Recall. This week's guests are Troy and Zach of Ohio Northern University. It's a small school out in the middle of nowhere, much like Wazoo is out here, but they are diving headfirst into esports, and they have quite the model ahead of them, someone who's well-versed in esports professionally as a player and now gaining his wings as a coach, as well as trying to ramp up an entire collegiate program. They are setting themselves up for success with tremendous growth planned for this year. I'm excited to introduce them. Our musical guest this week is none other than Jansen with his cover of the Cars song, Let's Go.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I mean, let's just get started into it. Let's start with Troy. Let's hear a little bit of your background, your origin story about how you got into esports, and then your role at ONU.
I'll try to do a summed up version of my history, and then you can ask whatever questions you're curious about. High school, I was a professional Halo Combat Evolved player, the first game that came out. Being pro back then wasn't what it was or what it is now. I would win things like TVs on the weekends and stuff. So dabbled with that. Did the military afterwards, came back from military, went to college. In college, I started up an esports club. This was at Southern Illinois University in Southern Illinois in Edwardsville. That ended up being kind of a resume builder where I started doing analyst work remotely for League of Legends amateur teams. And then I moved up to being coach, and I just kept filling in spots where I thought people were doing or performing poorly, like above me. So analyst work, then assistant coach work, then coach work, and went all the way to me having like a gaming house in amateur, to me getting interviews with like Team Liquid and CLG. And then I was given the choice to go pro or go collegiate. And I'm older, I'm 32, and I was getting married at the time, so it was like a weird transition phase. Like, do I keep doing esports? Like you said before we started recording, it is the wild, wild west. It's hard to manage a plan. It's hard to have like good merit to what you're trying to do. And 2017, I gave myself like this is the last year I'm going to look for a place. And collegiate started to explode, especially in Ohio. And I'm trying it out, figured I'd be good at it, and I think I'm doing a decent job. I guess that's like a good segue to Zach. I'll finish off. So Ohio Northern was seeing like a big boom in esports, and esports to them is like them being like a college, like an institution. It's a big admissions boom. It's a big opportunity to get students maybe they didn't get before, keep them here towards graduation, and also support STEM programs like computer science and whatnot. And it's coming to fruition. I think I recruit around 40 to 50% CS majors, but I still recruit like random construction management, pharmacy, all kinds of things like that. And the program here, we have a facility on the second floor of a building, a couple LAN rooms, which is PCs that are going to max out at 60 PCs. We have 22 now. I have a designated coaching room / player lounge. I just have an office for myself and like 6 student workers. And that's what the program looks like here. And it's also scholarshiped. Partially scholarship to stack on top of academic. And my teams did very well this year. I think there was only one loss between both teams in our local conference. But the real test is next semester when we're in TESPA and CLOL and all of that. So
absolutely. Yeah, and your two teams are just Overwatch and League of Legends at this point, the only competitive like scholarship teams.
Yeah, and then I also have a gaming club that hosts all other games, like from Magic to Gathering to D&D to anything like Civ 5 players. And that's around 160 students strong. So like I'll be doing a Call of Duty tournament with them and then a Smash Brothers tournament in December. But that's like club level. Institution recognized esports, just League and Overwatch. And for fall 2020, I'll be bringing on the BR games like PUBG, Fortnite, Apex. I'll be bringing on Rocket League, CSGO, Rainbow Six, TFT, Hearthstone. And I think that's it. That'll like max out the amount of computers I can use in these rooms that I have right now.
Those additional games like BR, Apex, all of them, are those going to be part of the scholarship teams or are those going to be part of the club? Yep. Oh, wow. Okay. So there's a tremendous amount of growth going on this year.
Yeah. And it's because there's a bit of skepticism from the administration here. They're starting to doubt how much I can grow because I only brought in two games, two strings per game, which was 22 students. And they only saw like 8 recruits. And they're like, oh, maybe it's not as big as we thought. But I only scaled it to myself because it's just me managing all these people. And at the beginning of the semester, I was super maxed on time, like pushing 50 to 60 hour days. And now I'm, or not days, weeks. And I hired a couple of student workers to help alleviate some of my work. And now I'm working like normal hours and it's a lot more manageable. But when I push like 80 to 100 students with all those games, it's going to be insane. I'll probably be hiring one or two people full time.
Absolutely. That is a lot of coordination. I mean, a single competition and single event on like a Friday night, even locally, eats up a lot of time and preparation and resources. So managing that many games, absolutely, you're going to need some help.
Even these two games, the director at, or I won't call him out by name, but there are a few directors that I'm friends with were calling me absolutely insane for even attempting to do two games with two teams each, so four teams coaching. It really did max out my time, and I was a bit naive, and they warned me, but yeah, it's a lot to manage. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're fine, totally. I just want to swing over and let Zach introduce himself and give us a little bit of his origin story.
I mean, basically for me, it all started like when I was like younger and everything like that. So I grew up with like two brothers. It was always insanely competitive. Constantly. I literally started off with like, I think Crash Bandicoot, like just the racing game. And then it just like evolved from there. And my first like, I guess like competitive style of gaming was Call of Duty. I was on almost like a semi-pro team, I guess you could say. It was called OG Mindset. And basically it was just, I would go around pub stomping people and it just involved just going around wrecking people. We entered tournaments and stuff. Me, I had no idea there was money being won. I was just playing the game for fun. I think I was like 14 at the time. So that happened, that went by. And then basically throughout my life, I've always played football as well. And then as of this year, I quit football. So I've always had that competitive aspect. And then I've always loved video games, still a diehard video gamer and everything like that. And then my brother actually helped start up the esports program at Kent State. So then that got me like really interested in it. Like, yo, that's actually like cool. Like, that's really interesting. And then from there, I was actually going to start the esports program here. And then all of a sudden, I think like a couple weeks prior to that, Troy had sent out the email. He's like, hey guys, I'm the esports coach here. I was like, awesome, dude. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And now I just try to help out as much as I can and try to help like manage like the Overwatch team and like just try to like be efficient with stuff.
Great. I mean, with Troy's long history in esports, I'm sure that there's been a lot of gaps that have been filled just with that experience and that acknowledgement of how these things go professionally, that there's a lot of easy lessons that have been learned.
Yeah.
Doing your events.
I think a big thing too is like, even though like, so like Troy, I don't think had very much prior, like, no, like acknowledgement to like Overwatch or anything like that. Like, he didn't understand the game as well, but like, he's like learning just as much as we are at the same time, and it like helps like both of us like progress more, like for him coaching and then for us like playing.
So what was the impetus behind like bringing you on, Troy, to start the esports coaching position? Like, you, now that you're a dedicated faculty member, is this like something that the university is like really kind of behind, or you mentioned that there's some skepticism behind it? So I'm kind of curious, what are you trying to prove by growing so quickly, and what is it that the faculty is expecting back from esports?
So I'll never go into a job wanting, like an esports job, wanting to push my own agenda. I try to like read the space, read the company, the university, and see what it is they want from it. So they hired me because they were getting campus visits where students would say, do you have esports? Because a lot of neighboring schools have esports now. And ONU would say no. This was like a year or so ago. They would say no, and that student would just be gone, and they wouldn't hear from them anymore. So they got a pretty good indicator of we need to hire somebody because we have no clue what we're doing. And I came here in October 2018, 2017. Dates are hard, but I came here like a little over a year ago, and they really didn't have much of a clue. Like, they had some clue of like what needed to be done, like what we need to build and what other schools have done. But there's also a lot of schools that have done it kind of wrong, like trying to set up like live venue arenas when they don't really need to. There's schools that have like windows in their hallways expecting people to stand in the hallways and watch people play video games like at their chairs and computers. But I set it up, I think, the most natural way I think a gamer or someone involved in esports would. I just have LAN rooms with just computers in it, no big screen TVs, no like projectors or anything, just maximum PC usage where they're just going to play. I have a coaching room that has the streaming set up, and I stream it to another venue on campus. So like there's theaters on campus, there's big venue spots with big projectors, and they can set up tables and chairs and have food there. And that made a lot more sense than having like an arena set up to where there's just 10 or 20 seats in the LAN center, which didn't make sense to me.
I 100% am on board with that plan. Yeah. Like that sounds way better. And a way more accessible way to even introduce the rest of the college to you have an esports organization. Like, that sounds way better than like going full in, like Full Sail did with their Armada Arena. Like,
yeah,
they've yet to prove that there's any longevity to collegiate esports and that there's going to be attention on esports to that level that would warrant that expense right now. Like, maybe they're more well connected than everyone else's, but like that kind of investment, that's huge. But here you are utilizing what your university has to offer.
Sure.
And that,
yeah,
distributed space.
I could have spent more money and set up something to where there'd be some kind of live arena where we invite other schools to come here and play and have like live audience. But I can still do that with what's already here. And I think that's just smarter and cheaper and a better incremental way to do this. I think Kent State, the one that Zach's brother is at, they did a partnership with the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And they built like a big arena where I don't know if they practice there or if that's just meant for like live games where people come out. Like, that's fine and all, but it's still kind of early.
Yeah, he says they actually like host events there and just like,
yeah,
like it's more event based.
Okay, so that's completely fine. That's not really the space we were at. You pretty much need to be near a city with an airport or have highways that go by you. This school's a little bit smaller. There's not too much access to outside people, but we could have like local private schools come here, and I'm still set up for that. I have separate LAN rooms where one team could be in one room and the other team can be in another, and we just still host the live venue somewhere else on campus. I think you asked a different question that I can't remember.
I mean, you know what? Like, wherever we go, that's totally fine. And
okay.
It's a great conversation. We're going to keep this super organic. You don't have to worry about like going back to my answer because I mean, we're getting lots of interesting and fun information here. Now, like with you being a smaller, or I'm assuming a smaller university, how many students are actually on campus?
It's 3,000, and I think my gaming club could get to 300 within a year or so, which is 10% student body, and that would be the biggest entity on campus.
I can 100% see that happening this year, especially.
Yeah, it's already at 160 right now.
Yeah, and there's so many of these outside leagues and tournaments forming up that you would have no problem finding a place or a venue for them to actually be participating and competing in. So, yeah, absolutely. That number almost seems like a easily achievable goal within this year.
I think that's a big thing too. It's like recently, especially, we've been like noticing like other groups have been like, oh, hey, let's host a Call of Duty tournament. And we're like, you guys aren't in the gaming club or whatever. Like, if you guys like get into this, like there's such a more like vast variety of like people you can actually reach out to instead of like the, let's say like the club only has like 20 or 30 people, and now all of a sudden you have 160, and it just skyrockets and it just builds from there.
This is one of my favorite things, is that even though there's the separation between the esports side and gaming club side, there's still a whole lot of crossover, and there's a whole lot of acceptance and integration between the two in every college that I've talked to that has a similar setup. And so it's still that very inclusive environment and activity, but you also get to set the expectations for each one. One is very competitive driven, the other's more social, more casual, more fun based, but then also learning and teaching, that this is the perfect avenue for it. Like having that small group of players, like 160 is not a small group, but you have those dedicated players and who are willing to teach and involve other people. That way, that 160 grows exponentially. And it's just going to be a great, great thing to see coming up over the next, what, semester or two. I imagine you already had your freshman fall fair, just kind of introducing everyone to the clubs. How did that go for you all?
I had to miss a lot of it. So the year prior, I was able to go to everything on the weekends because all I did was like recruiting and outreach and all that. And then this semester, every weekend was like dedicated to competitive. And it seemed like every match was scheduled at the same time, like a big freshman or high school senior event coming in. So I had to get my student workers to do a lot of that. So I can't really like know exactly how it went. But there is a ton of popularity for all kinds of games. I just more so get upset, I guess, that I can't host all of it myself. And some of them have to be in a void space where they're seeing other people's games getting hosted, whereas they still need to play in their dorm, or they don't have a spot for people to like be more communal. But now that my season is over this semester, I'm trying to do events where they use our LAN rooms. They come in and plug in their consoles or whatever. I want to do a Smash event, Call of Duty event. I want to do a communal, like just gaming night where there is no tournament or anything. We're just there to game and hang out and meet each other. And I want to do more events like that during the off time that I have. And I'm starting to figure out I don't have that much off time because I have a couple weeks left this semester. And then next semester probably starts mid-January. Then I have from mid-January to beginning of February of off time. And then it's right back into competition. So I'm trying to get the gaming club and the student leaders in that to be as competent and autonomous as they can be. It's a little slow moving because a lot of them are wary to be a leader and to do things themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. A lot of these clubs that I've talked to, they involve a tremendous amount of time to be involved with and to really execute it. And a lot of the clubs start off with that one person who is extremely dedicated and passionate about it. And they spend, much like you did in your first year, they spend 60 to 80 hours a week trying to push this and grow it in their own image kind of thing, or what they expect. So I can totally see that you being that example for the last year, that someone might go, maybe that's a little too much for me. Do you have any examples of how you might try and train individuals or to promote that longevity of the club?
Yeah, so I did what I'm asking them to do in college. And I know that it can be hard sometimes, and it'll be like months or maybe a month where you're just like gone because of schoolwork or whatever. So I'm trying to make it as easy as possible, like one student leader that branches out and finds a couple others, and then get student reps for each game. Cause there's always going to be like one really passionate guy about like Rainbow Six or Call of Duty or whatever. And they can help round up the others to do events. And it can just be a easy ladder system where the student reps rounding up the students and getting the interest form filled out and whatnot. Next up, the ladder is like an event coordinator getting a venue for us and maybe like some additional power and networking that the room might need, or tables and chairs. And then if that event coordinator needs my help, then I'm just like the overarching faculty advisor that can help out with that. It's pretty easy to do. It's more so someone doesn't want to take the time out initially to learn it because it's maybe daunting, or they just don't want to be responsible for another thing here, because this school is pretty like academically intensive for most degrees. So I'm completely in the understanding of they don't want to put too much extra time and they'd rather just walk into something that's already happening. It's just there's only so much time that I have. And even when I add in more employees underneath me, full-timers, it's still going to be the same ratio of like one employee per 25-ish people. I don't see it getting much easier for us. But no, we'll just try our best, you know, make as many events as we can, help the students here have a community to join, and make it be cyclical to where whenever someone graduates that was doing one leadership role, they can just teach a freshman how to do it very easily and have it not be as daunting.
Yeah, if I could say that there is one thing that I've heard from all the students that I've been talking to, is that the amount of work that they do and the quality of work that they turn out and what they're thinking about is what I expect of someone who's already been working professionally for a number of years and even a management role or like almost an executive or at least a lead role. So these students grow up real fast when they start taking on these leadership roles, especially when they start executing. So there's a huge benefit for spending time here if that's something that you're comfortable with. I absolutely agree in the student first, then athlete later, but there is definitely a lot of benefit for being so active and creating something from the ground up or pushing for it from the ground up.
Yeah, and I'm completely in the know of telling them, like, the stuff you're doing now can be your resume builder, because it was for me. And that's just going to be the natural flow of things, again, because it was for me. But it's still a growing industry. Like, my assistant that helps me out a lot said he's looking for jobs, especially with teams, like doing like team management, general management stuff for League of Legends and Overwatch. And he's like, how do you even apply for these jobs? And most teams don't have applications out there. They just have a buddy in LA and they hire him. So that's like the realistic notion of it's hard. It's a hard industry to break into. But
and it's hard, yeah, for now, but I mean, everyone is growing. Like, you, yeah, look at the industry as from a professional perspective, everyone is growing right now. Whether you believe in an esports bubble or not, this avenue is growing right now. And so there may not be applications, or there may not be like formal job positions listed on the team's website, but there will be eventually. They will have those roles listed, and all the experience in an esports club is going to make 100% crossover.
Yeah, some of the higher end roles. So I always apply for head coach positions just to like keep myself in the face of professional league play in case I ever go back to that. It's still within my plan, but I just did an interview with FlyQuest 2 weeks ago, and I denied them after a second interview just because I can't live in a gaming house. That's like one of my rules that I won't go with again. And just because it's not a very like adult, responsible adult environment. But he also told me, FlyQuest did, that League is most likely going to be geolocating. So LCS is going to be geolocating. And that's why they still have a gaming house, because they don't want to do a 5 to 10 year lease on somewhere in LA, because if it geolocates, you know, that's just a wasted down payment. And that was really cool to hear, because that's the infrastructure I'm looking for. That's why I'm waiting here in collegiate to... I didn't say that earlier. I'm working collegiate, waiting to go pro again, just like waiting for that to get a little bit better.
Totally. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you see a lot of organizations moving away from the gamer house sentiment, because there's been a lot of found results of giving people a break from each other, or not just mixing work and play and where you live and sleep all in the same place. So it totally makes sense.
Yeah,
and
you have no authority. So yeah, when I was in the gaming house, I would wake up in my PJs and cook my players breakfast, because my general manager was awful. And that shouldn't be like a work environment for a coach. Like, a coach should have some authority if he needs to use that as a tool. And that's almost impossible in a gaming house.
So you're not a fan of gaming houses on campus? You wouldn't have all of your Overwatch
I would love for them to have a house, because that's like camaraderie overload, and that's what they need. And the same goes with esports teams. You probably hear interviews where players and past players are like, I don't know how a team can work if everyone doesn't like each other, because you have to spend so much time together. You have to talk all the time. Even if like a negative tone comes out, that could mess up the whole day. And that's very true. Like even my players here, I have a few players on each team that don't mesh very well. And like Zach can talk more about this. And that's most of my job here, is just getting people to like each other, because that's most of the battle with getting a good team and having a good like culture and environment within esports.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that we like ran into, like he just like mentioned, was like, I guess like a big thing is tilt. Another thing would be just for the mere fact that each player is on like different, like I guess like the way Troy like explained like coaching everything to us is like everyone plays games and everybody reaches their own plateaus, and it all just depends which players reach those plateaus sooner than others and at what like points in time. So like me personally, I was probably like gold last year when I started playing Overwatch, because I never really played PC Overwatch and stuff like that, and I just put in a lot of time, and I've always been like pretty like decent at video games, and now I'm like masters. And then just like some other players or whatever like that, like people hit plateaus differently, and you just have to like overcome the that plateau, but it's always harder for other people. And then if you have like certain people that like don't want to have to deal with a teammate hitting that plateau, and like for instance, like let's say like the healer is not like up to par with the tank, and the tank is just constantly like, yo, where's my heals? Like it gets to the point where it's just like we're not moving anywhere. And like Troy helps out a lot with that, but just like me like explaining and just like figuring out the problem before it gets like insanely big and ruining the team, kind of.
Another That's thing great. Too is these guys are also students and players, so there's going to be different boundaries on how far they're trying to go, like competitively or if they're trying to have fun. There could be someone that's just good and they want to have fun and they're not really looking to develop. But if the rest of the team is looking to develop, it's kind of like an off-kilter thing going on. So what I try to teach them is like, regardless of where anyone's at, no matter what, you have to have respect for them, or else you won't have a conversation and the team's just going to be really, really off-kilter. I did have problems with that. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, like, a big thing is, like, priorities, too. So, like, a couple of our players on the team, like, take esports very seriously. Like, I personally take esports, like, very seriously, like, practice everything like that. Like, I'm very competitive. I just always have been. Basically, my whole thing is like, I want to go into a game and just completely decimate my, like, opponent. And then, like, there's other players or whatever like that. Like, their priorities obviously reside in, like, school. And just, like, it just, like, all depends on where, like, you level out things and, like, things like that. And that sometimes, like, gets in the way and like conflicts each other, but that's basically it.
Yeah, and Troy, with your experience having been on a formal team and having worked in a gaming house, like I imagine that you have a lot of that mental coaching that you can provide. I mean, Zach, being from a competitive background and traditional sports and everything, I'm sure you have a little bit more of that mental conditioning about when things aren't going right and you just need to suck it up and go through that next play kind of thing, or just that resilience that goes over time when you're down a certain number of points in football and you just know that one play could turn it around. How do you teach that to your players and your teammates, and that, especially because a lot of people are just getting into competitions or competitive play because they never played traditional sports, but esports has kind of opened that up for them. What's your method for teaching a little bit more of that mental and emotional conditioning?
I mean, if you want, I'll start. Basically, like, my whole thing was, like, in football, when I played football and everything like that, like, a lot of the time it was, like, a big quote in football is, like, don't worry about it, it's the next player or whatever, like, just keep on going. Like, if you guys, like, for instance, like, Overwatch or whatever, enemy team has 6 ults and you have no ults, I doubt you win that fight. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, like, not... It's like it gets to a point where it's just like you don't win that fight, and a lot of people will end up getting like upset or like mad that you don't win the fight, but that's just the state of the game. But like then that people will let that like get to them, the fact that they lost that fight. But instead of that, it's usually like the motto and like kind of like the thing I kind of run with is just like, dude, don't worry about it, just like cream next fight and just like keep on going with it, instead of just getting like fatigued over the thought of losing one simple fight.
See, I'd probably need a little bit more practice. Like I said, and what Zach said, is I was pretty new to coaching Overwatch. Overwatch is way more emotional, and some sports like traditional sports are also emotional too, but you usually don't have to deal with that because when they're playing a game, the emotions don't really matter too much. It's more so just if you're performing, you're performing. If you're not, you're not. You know, maybe the emotions are getting in the way, but there isn't that much that can stop that outside of like a pregame talk or a halftime talk or something like that, or just something that you do in practice. But where I came from with coaching, and I didn't grow up like wanting to be a coach. I was a player first, kind of. I just kept stumbling into esports. And as I've been learning to become a better coach, I've done it with League of Legends, which is kind of like, it's able to be a very emotionless game, very cognitive and heavy knowledge-based game. So if something's happening, there's almost never confusion on why that happened, unless you're confused on how you got to that point and you're just not a very competitive team. So when I was coaching near professional and my time with professional play, it's always just what information's there, how to handle it, and how that information can turn into plays. And then it goes into like the communication and universal terms we use, different plays and different states of the game that you can decipher information with, and then like separating responsibilities. I never taught a team to have like a shot caller. I'm not a firm believer in that. Just because of like, let's say emotions do attack that shot caller on the day of competition, he's going to be somewhat obsolete that day. So if you have a process where the whole team is able to understand this information and talk through it and have plays be kind of organic and states of the game and win conditions be pretty organic, that's the ideal in my opinion. And teaching that is just like heavy, heavy fundamentals. And I do process theory. I forgot which basketball coach came up with this, but I studied that a little bit before I started coaching myself. And process theory is just when you're heavily ignoring competition and you're just working on what the team's bottlenecks are, what the team needs to improve on, how to do that, how to set up your lesson plans for the week, the month, and benchmark it out to where when it's learned, and you're not going to have to go back to it as you work on other things. So I don't know. I don't really, you were asking about how to handle emotion, and I guess I kind of alleviate that by default because I don't really let emotions come into play.
Yeah, and I mean, that can be just the simple nature of it. And I mean, when you're teaching everyone to be their own organic communicator and not having that shot caller, like you're reducing a single point of failure to sharing the responsibility across everyone. So you're kind of mitigating anyone going on tilt, like Zach was saying earlier, that as long as you're communicating and everyone can kind of counterbalance each other in that, you're still getting to that source of truth of that moment and what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another thing too is like when you really think about it, like the whole communication aspect of everything, it's like communication can almost be seen like as like a crutch. So if you have like that shot caller constantly just calling everything like that, and then one day the shot caller is just not there, let's say, or there's no comms that day, like whatever, and then like, what does the team do at that point? The team's just brain dead without them. Like, that's not how it should work. Everyone should kind of have like that hive mindset of, hey, focus this, like focus Hammond on point, or like just, it should be like, it should just be like that hive mind of knowing who to target, who to focus, and just having like the set priorities.
Yeah. I mean, it's no different than like a play in football. Everyone knows what their job is for every position along the way. So why can't that extend to esports? I kind of agree with that. Now, I want to kind of bring it back to the club as a whole. So, I mean, you have an extensive list of goals of bringing on way more teams and way more players. What would you say you would have to accomplish this year to make it a success in the university's eyes?
So in the universities, you know, yes, the school very much cares about the quality of life of the players and students. And I'm not really involved in the academic quality. Like, sure, I can make it to where the esports program isn't going to interrupt their studies, and I'll never make it that way. The way I hold my practices is, let's say Zach needs to study for a test this Thursday and he needs to miss Wednesday. That's fine. I just bring someone up from second string and sub them out. And then I have third and fourth and fifth string possibly within the gaming club. So I can just always sub people out to where they can miss whatever they need to for like doing a different club's events, if they do a different sport, if they just need to study for a test, or if they just want to have a break, like go on a date or something, whatever. It doesn't need to be heavily mandated, because this school is also a semi D3 type school. So I want to keep that hobbyist mentality here of, you know, sure, we want to be competitive, but at the same time, this isn't your life. This isn't the only thing you chose to do. And I think that's a point of success, but also the school wants me to have this be an admissions boosting thing, recruit people. And I think that's going to be pretty easy and hard. So I think it's easy because I run a pretty good program. When I meet people for campus visits, they genuinely believe I'm a very realistic, real example of what a role model in this space should be, because I'm a gamer. I'm also older. I have a degree. I can be the normal managerial adult, but I can also be the guy who watches meme videos in here with them when they want to just relax. So I'm a pretty good liaison between like what the school wants from me and what the kids want from me. And that goes back into, so I think I'm pretty good fill for this position. I think my rooms are very nice. Like they pretty much hit the ideal of what I want from like an esports facility. It'd be nice to have like a casual gaming area, but that's like in years to come and it's in the plans. But recruiting, that's the easy side of recruiting. I also visit high schools every Friday. I just go to a high school and have them do whatever they want with me. If admissions wants to talk to me, or counseling, or the principal, or students that want esports there or have esports there, they want me to coach them or just talk to them about what's going on in the space, I do that almost every Friday. Where it's hard, where it may be hard, what I'm predicting, esports is exploding. Like there's 40 or so colleges in Ohio. There used to be like 3 or 4 in Illinois, where I'm from, and there's going to push like 20 next year. It's just absolutely exploding in the Midwest, and that's going to be a weird bubble where the schools are more prepared than what the high schoolers know is out there, if that makes sense. So there's going to be a bunch of high schoolers that are just blindsided by, oh wow, there's esports. Like they were choosing a school beforehand of just like a degree, and there's going to be some freshmen in the next 2 years that are just completely oblivious that they were walking into a school that actually had esports. But after a few years, once it's kind of the norm, there'll be people that look more specifically at programs, who is in charge of the program, how the teams are ran, the history of the teams. And I just want to set up a good history here for that to be a good case study for a student to look at in the next few years. Because like Ohio State's going to come into it, and public schools, like big, like 20,000, 30,000 student body schools. And that's going to be like an insane explosion that the private schools might not be able to handle. And that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that impact of larger schools buying in, going full tilt, and then having like full scholarship rides ready for players ahead of time when they're not prepared for it, but then being able to outpace the smaller schools. Because right now I'm seeing a ton of schools like Ohio Northern University buying into esports as soon as possible, or like more so than some of the bigger schools are. Until, and I can imagine that's until collegiate esports is a little more figured out, or until the clubs just kind of explode on their own and kind of have this organic reach like you see on like Instagram and TikTok and all that, that these clubs are very much the same idea, that it's underpriced attention for a lot of these students and for these schools.
Yeah, some of the schools, it's actually insane that they left them. They ignored the esports portion for so long. So like ISU, Illinois State, they have 12 teams that have been competing for like 4 years, and it's only in 2020 going to be recognized. And like when I was in school, so like I started my esports club probably in 2010. Yeah, around 2010, 2009. And it was big enough to where the school could have recognized us by back then. So it's been like a really weird, long void space that just didn't have to happen. It's nice that it's being filled in now, and I'm part of that infrastructure growth. But like, there's there's generations of people that just or a generation of people that just missed out, like people that are introverts because they didn't do anything but play games at home after school when they could have been at a community at school or somewhere, like naturally making friends, naturally filling in those interpersonal gaps they didn't grow up with. That's like the sad story I tell to a lot of interviewers that ask me about, like, oh, this is so new, but it's not. Like, I grew up with it. I could have had it be something. And sure, I sound jaded, but at the same time, I know there's tons, thousands of people in the US that could have grown up with it too, if only there wasn't that stereotype stigma of games will ruin your lives, games will like make people not interpersonally strong or fail their classes or whatnot. Like, sure, I have guys here that, you know, will stay in here all night, but eventually, you know, that's just them being excited. Eventually, they're going to go back to their norm of doing what they need to with their classes and, you know, enjoying what they have now with the esports and facilities they have.
You know, you and me have a very similar story. I mean, I'm 33 now, and like there was no gaming clubs, no gaming groups on campus for my school and everything. In high school, it was just like, if you're a gamer, you're kind of off on the side anyways.
It should have been.
No one really had that foresight or was really picking up on Counter-Strike 1.4, 1.2 kind of thing and looking at that future or anything like that. So yeah, that's a huge bummer, which is part of why I started the podcast, because I need to be a part of that space. And I feel like I was kind of robbed. I was like, what, 8 years too early, something like that.
Yep.
How about you, Zach? What does a successful year for you look like?
Competitively or socially? Because I kind of hold those in two different regards, to be honest.
I mean, whatever you feel like sharing. I want to hear both as a player and as a student.
So, I mean, just as like, in the organization and everything like that, like, honestly, I met so many people here I probably would have never talked to a day in my life, because it's just, like, for instance, if I'm playing games, I'm, like, not leaving my screen, obviously. Like, come on now. So I'm not really, like, going out, really doing much and everything like that. But, like, I met, like, it's just, like, it's so cool to see, like, all, like, the different people and everything like that in the club. And then at the same time, it's, like, I would have never, like, expected to actually, like bond as much with them as I have. Like, I met like a couple seniors like from all different years, everything like that, and it's just been a great time, everything like that. So I mean, overall, I just wanted to constantly just stay like a good community and just kind of like keep on flourish and just overall just pop off. And then competitively, like, for me, I'm insanely competitive, so like I want to like beat everybody, obviously, like in this next couple, like in the spring semester when we do like TESPA, I want to like go as far as we can and like actually get like challenged and just like figure out like where we actually place among like every other team. Because I don't, my whole thing is like I want to just destroy every other team. It doesn't matter who they are. It's just, let's just go off, beat them, and then find our next opponent and then find someone who can challenge us, or if not, beat us.
See, Zach, I really appreciate that perspective. I don't hear enough players just going like, I don't care who it is, I just want to smother them into the ground. Like, I love that that personality and that take on it, and just that, because that can be so inspiring to your teammates as well, and it lets people know what you're there for. And that's real authenticity and competitive spirit, and I love hearing it.
So if you want to call me out and see if I'm wrong, Zach, so what I do with my players, and I'm just assuming I did this with you. So what I do with my players is I really introduce them to what like competition is, like in its essence, like emotional state form. And when I first interview the players, when they are first introduced to me and I'm figuring out what I'm going to do with tryouts and ranking my players for first string, second string and whatnot, I ask a question in my interviews where it's, why do you compete? Why do you want to be good? Why do you even try? And usually they answer like random different questions that doesn't get to the root emotion. And I've never read anything like in a psychology book or sports psychology about this. This is like something I kind of made up. I think there's only like three motivators that a person can have. So are you aware of Faker? Like, you know who Faker is, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, so one example would be like Faker's motivation is he wants to be, in essence, as good as possible within himself. He doesn't want anyone to be better than him, but he doesn't want to beat the other person per se. He wants to just be the best that he can be. And that's one motivator. Like, really, man, I had a good word for this, but now it's gone. But really, like, internal rather than external forces being pushed out. Whereas me and Zach share the same motivator of, like, I used to break dance a lot when I was growing up, and I used to do, like, really show-offy type stuff. Like, I was a lifeguard, and I would always, like, do competitions on the diving board and try to, like, one-up whoever I'm against. And it was always to, like, sit on that pedestal and be like, I can do a cooler move, I practice harder than you, you wasted your time, I win, you lose. And that motivator is more external of, like, you really want to showcase yourself, you really want to be above the other person, not in a malicious way, but that's like that competitive drive you have. And then the third motivator is you just don't want to be bad. You don't want to be seen as incompetent. You don't want teammates to have to not be able to rely on you. And that's that third motivator usually is like a trigger point that tells me you've never really been good at anything and you've never really surpassed plateaus. And I'm able to weed a wide variety of people out with this question and figure out their motivator. So for one, I can weed people out with it. And then another, I can really see what their motivator is. And I can use that as a tool to motivate them and have them be better prepared to have a good day of practice or to overcome whatever it is they're overcoming, whatever plateau they're on or the team is on, or to help a teammate understand why this guy. So like Zach wants to be really competitive. He wants to win at all costs. And let's say there's someone else on the team that, you know, he just doesn't want to be incompetent. Everyone needs to understand where those motivators are and respect it to where you can have a respectable relationship on the team. And I'm not able to do that without knowing their answer from them and like really having them give me the grassroots answer. So I let them attempt the question a couple times and then I answer a couple case studies like Faker and whatnot. And then they understand it more. And eventually we get to that root cause of what their motivator is.
I like that approach a lot. There's so much that you can dive into about a person just by understanding what motivates them. And then you figure out a specific approach to them. And then the rest is up to them. And if they pull off the work, if they're willing to do the time and the effort to change that motivator, to learn from it and kind of grow out of some of that kind of defeatist attitude of, I just don't want to lose kind of thing, like giving them the opportunity to move out of that and grow out of that, that's huge. And I mean, that's going to be such a positive thing for anyone who goes through your gaming club. Just to be like, yeah, I used to think this about myself, and now I'm better at this game, and I feel like I can communicate better. I'm more social. I understand what a bad mentality is going to do to me and my actions. Like, I love that stuff. So hearing that you have that going on,
yeah, and that's definitely the positive motivator. But on the opposite end, there is a negative. Whereas, let's say I tell someone, you know, they're on that third motivator where it's, you know, they don't want to be bad. That's going to like stagnate them. And it's really that trigger point of like, are you going to grow or are you going to succumb? And when they succumb, then they just need to humble out and know where they are. Like, are they going to be a hobbyist? Are they okay with the skill level they're going to be at and just like have fun with the game? And that's good. Like, you can be completely joyful of that life, right? But it's also going to be a hard, humbling experience of like, crap, you know, I'm not willing to go over these plateaus to be that competitive. So there is like that negative, but also the positive is everything you were saying. It's very fulfilling for me to give someone that jumpstart or humble someone out to realize they're not at the right state of mind to get better.
Yeah,
sorry to cut you off.
No, you're totally fine. As much as there is that negative repercussion, but like people accepting that and acknowledging that of their own personal mentality and where their motivations lie, like having them accept that is just putting them on a better path to find what makes them happy, what is going to be that right space for them. So in the end, you're still helping them. It may not be the easiest pill to swallow, but it is still ultimately helping them. And I mean, that's just another avenue of how responsible esports leadership can actually be growing everyone from a casual perspective all the way up to the hyper competitive.
Mm-hmm. Was I on point, Zach, at all? Or?
Yeah, bro, you slayed it, dude.
Okay.
What was that like for you, Zach? Like going in and starting to learn about those other motivators as kind of like one of the Overwatch team players, knowing that you have to understand those mentalities and motivations of other players. And then how did that match with your like in your face, over the top kind of competitiveness?
I mean, yeah, like a big thing for me was like I didn't really understand it at first, whatever. Like, because like Troy never really explained it to us. Like, he found out like everybody's like motivators and everything like that. And then like, we kind of hit like that big like plateau that kind of every team hits of like, oh shit, like what happened? Like things went bad. And then like, so we had like that whole conversation. Basically, we just kind of like all sat down and then just explained each other like why we're here and stuff like that. And it kind of like helped out a lot too, because like I'm not going to argue with someone now about like why they're not like doing this much, like not doing as much work or like this or that as like me, for instance, or like someone else on the other team. And it's just like, you have to like have like self, you have to have like respect for like your teammates. You can't just like pop off and just be like, dude, why aren't you like putting in like 12 hours a day, dude? What's like, what's wrong?
So what he's referring to is they really did hit like a wall. And it was kind of like an emotional wall rather than like in game, like you're mechanically bad at the game. Like, sure, there was some of the mechanically bad things going on in our competition. So it was that wall of like either a lot of blame was going to go around, a lot of criticism was going around, but not too much like progressive thought was going to go around. So I brought everyone in and I really didn't want to come in that day because it was like heavy snow day. And I was like, I'm going to die driving to work. But I still came in and I did, I call it amnesty hour. And I got that from the military. I'm not that big of a fan of the military. I did it for like the benefits and whatnot, but there were some positive aspects that really teach you some life positive things. So this amnesty hour thing that we did in basic training was, there's tons of people that are always going to have problems with one another. And if you just, what my drill instructor did is brought everyone in the room, had everyone say like, you have to tell the truth. And like, I'm going to know if you don't, and I'm going to like shit on you if you don't. And they had to like, everyone had to say their truthful gripes with one another. And it really does help out the situation of like having a space where it's okay to say what you really feel and have the other person be forced to listen to it. And they can't really yell about it because it's a group setting. It's like one-on-one where you can tell it to someone and sure they can ignore it. But if you have a bunch of witnesses going around and everyone's being really honest, it sets up an environment where it's just pure acceptance. And I like that a lot. And it worked. I was worried at first because there's a huge spectrum of like hobbyist to competitive people on the team. And there's very easily able to be that ego of like the high ranked player to the lower ranked player. But we're still in the process of getting through that. No team can perfectly do it, but that's most of what the progressive training is just getting people on the right page. And sure, that doesn't really sound like what you would hear from most coaches and players, but that's the realistic, I think in my opinion, that's like the realistic notion of what you need to tackle first, is just having people respect each other and able to work together and not have to like come into the LAN center and have to flip a switch to like, I'm going to be a robot now and just play with these guys and get the job done. You should be able to come in, you know, at normal flip switch, you know, normal, emotional state of the day and just walk in and be okay.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why modern corporations are modeled after the military, because that chain of command kind of works. And like having an exercise like Amnesty Hour makes a lot of sense. I mean, you have to break down those barriers. You have to make sure that everyone can trust you from all angles from a military perspective. Otherwise, if you're going into a combat situation and you don't know if someone's got your back, that's putting everyone on risk. And when you translate that down to a competitive team, like if you can't, like the example earlier, if you can't trust your healer to be in the right spot, doing the right thing, and you can't understand where they're at, like the team's going to crumble. And just like the professional wall, the rookie wall, everyone ends up hitting it. It's how you come back from that. It's how you recognize that and how you can have that constructive conflict within your team, but being honest and authentic about it without just popping off on someone and making them feel like they just got buried into the ground kind of thing. Like, you have to be able to be honest, but then respectful of that as well. So I think that's a great practice to bring in, because I don't think a lot of people actually bring that or understand that from an outside perspective when looking at a competitive team, whether it's esports or traditional sports. Like, there is that level of intimacy with your teammates that has to be there. Otherwise, it's not going to be 100% flush.
Yeah, and I talk with a lot of schools that do full ride programs like Harrisburg and Maryville and whatnot. And most of the people that are coaches at those schools, I don't really know how they got hired, but they're just not ready for the emotional states they have to handle, especially with student players rather than just players. And there's a lot of schools that'll hire someone, and within a year that guy is just gone. And I have a funny story with Harrisburg. So I was doing their interviews. Are you aware of Harrisburg and their full ride program?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I was one of the candidates for being their League of Legends coach. And I gave them the idea before they started all of this of colleges can be a really good hub for getting foreign talent to be Americanized and have them contracted at these colleges to have the pro teams buy out that contract. So you still make money on that contract being bought from a pro team, that you're the money that you were going to lose from them not graduating, not being there the rest of the years, or that retention number. And they took that idea and hired like a trilingual Asian guy, because Korea and China were the big hitters with foreign players coming in. So didn't get hired for that one, but I think they're using my idea. I hope they are. I think it's a very smart thing to do. And I've talked to GMs for like Clutch Gaming and Optic and stuff like that at Scouting Grounds. And they said, yeah, that's an insane idea. But I'm still not seeing it come to fruition. I think in a few years I will. Unless they change those league laws in LCS and Overwatch League.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that happening. I mean, being able to actually translate and communicate and then even cross those cultural barriers through language, that would be such a huge tool to have. And I mean, I remember when it was the first season of the Overwatch League, I think it was the Philadelphia Fusion, they had like 7 different spoken languages on their initial roster. Like, because they had their full bench and everything. And like, I could not imagine trying to coach through that without being able to go to at least one other person by proxy and be like, okay, tell them to do this, tell them what, ask this question, that kind of thing. But being able to be self-satisfied and being able to do that yourself, like, that would have been such a huge benefit of being on that team.
That'd be such a time sink of just translating one sentence to a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our hour together, and I want to give you two a chance to do some shout outs, let people know where you can be contacted at, or what your social media is, what your Twitch channel is, all that kind of stuff, and what you have going on. So by all means, Troy, take the lead and let us know what ONU has got going on or coming up.
I think the best way to get to all of those things is onu.edu/esports, or you can probably just type in Ohio Northern Esports in Google and get to most things that you need to find. I'm on my email every day. That's how recruits are able to get to me, and they just send out the forms from there. We do stream all of our competitive games, and the stream is pretty rudimentary right now. It'll grow in time. With the gaming club, yeah, that's going to grow organically. I don't know what other shout outs to do. I mean, Zach, you can shout out whatever you want.
Dude, I ain't got nothing to shout out, man.
What about your mom, dude? Let's go.
I love you, mom. No, but I mean, honestly, like, if you just get in, like, if honest to God, if you like got in contact with Troy and then just like wanted to even like contact me or something like that, or like contact another player, like, that's like so easily arrangeable. Or that's not even a word, arrangeable.
But, I'm also not just a contact for ONU. When I go to these high schools, sure, I talk about ONU and they ask a lot of questions about ONU because that's where I'm working. But I'll also just help people figure out what they're doing. So I get a lot of emails from like kids from California or Alaska or Maine or Hawaii. And they're just wondering what's going on, because in their states, there's not that much esports. Well, California, yeah, there is, but in some of these other states where there's like no esports schools, they're just wondering how it happened, if they can help it happen, if they can join. There's also a lot of campus visits that I do where I kind of know that the student's not going to be coming here, but I'll still just help out. I'll answer whatever questions they need. And you can do that through email.
Yeah, Discord, big thing.
Whatever.
I think a big thing too is like we're really like honest about and upfront about literally everything that we do. There's never like Owen used the best for everything. It's like it's not. It's like nowhere is the best for everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's like, definitely students that ask, you know, they'll literally say to me, "Sell ONU to me," and I said, "I can't. I need to know you first. Like, I could say all kinds of things, but I don't know if you want that. So if it's someone that wants like a bigger school, or a more personal smaller school, wants it in a city or not, there's a bunch of variables, and you just need to think about those. And I can be a voice to talk to, or I can set you up with a student to talk to you, like within the same degree that you're going to be doing."
I thought it was funny that one time too. There was one time we actually went to one of the local high schools around here and everything like that. One of the students literally asked Troy, just like word for word, he was like, "Should I go to ONU?" And Troy, I mean, how do you answer that? There's literally you can't give an honest answer about that, like, because one, you don't know him at all. Two, I think the three main things people have to consider when like choosing a major, for like me personally, what I did was money, the major offered, and location. And then, like, a fourth two would be, like groups, organizations, and everything like that revolve around. But it always changes for everybody. Like, me personally, I grew up in, like, the Cleveland area. And coming out to here, to Ada, like, Ada, Ohio, is where our university is. It's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. So, like, that was cool to me. I actually thoroughly enjoy this, surprisingly. I just get to go play games all day. But, yeah.
I think that's it for shout-outs.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you for having us. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming out and having the conversation. If you have anything else going on or any new developments, feel free to reach out, and I'm happy to boost the signal for you guys. Let me know when your next competitions are, and I'll boost those signals. I'm already following you on Twitter, so I'll be sure to promote your competitive matches coming up, and we will hopefully see you all doing well in TESPA in the upcoming seasons.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Later.
To you. Summoning Hour Podcast.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the podcast. Yeah.